know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart. Thoughts and feelings often disregarded, so we're stuck here trying to stop.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert Rosenthal. Thank you for listening. My interview today is with Lauren Tate. We just completed this interview. It's really a lot of fun for me. I wanted to pick his brain on all things Illini for the past 50 or 60 years. And so we did just that. It goes pretty long. It's almost an hour and a half. So I apologize for the length, but we were having fun just talking back and forth. I did the radio with him yesterday, and I asked him if he'd come on the podcast today, and I gave him the option to do it on the phone, but he said he'd be fine coming over here. And he's been by here before, and we've hung out after he's played golf and such, and we're always very, very careful. I know some people are concerned about that, especially, you know, he turned 89 yesterday. So I go over and above. He doesn't even come through the house. He sits in a chair on the deck. I sit 12 feet away. We never got closer than that the whole time he was here. I even wiped down anything he was going to touch with Lysol and Clorox wipes and things like that. I replaced the windscreen on his mic. I wanted to be super, super careful. So it was fully socially distanced, and, you know, 6 feet wasn't enough. So we sat even further than that apart, in case you're concerned about something like that. So this is our conversation. We sat out here, and you know, you'll probably hear some champagne sounds in the background. You'll probably hear some planes on approach to Willard and such. And there's probably some wind in my mic and things like that. But that's the fun of recording outdoors, which I felt was kind of necessary, and we wanted to do it that way. So this is that interview. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening. Here's my interview with Lauren Tate. Let's start at the beginning. Let's do the Lauren tip. Happy birthday, by the way, a few days
later.
Do you hate the fact that your birthday is like everywhere, or do you not mind it?
I don't mind.
Okay, good. Okay. Because you see, they're saying it on the Zoom calls.
Oh, well, I just didn't want. Yeah,
Caleb Griffin said it today.
That really caught me by surprise because I was almost not paying attention.
Oh, really?
Well, it was kind of the end of the call, and I had the doggone TV on over on the corner, and I'm watching the results,
And
I got kind of distracted, and I thought he was done, and all of a sudden I heard him. And
happy birthday, Lauren.
I waved to him at least.
Uh-huh. So I just want to start by going through your 89 years. So because we've talked about this before. I think a lot of people know it, so we don't have to go deep into it. But let's just start with, like, Monticello and your dad and the paper and how you kind of got into that and then where that took you into college and beyond that.
Well, okay. I mean, it all began, of course, down in Kentucky when my dad died when I was real young. And they moved me up to Hoopston with my grandparents. And my mother was going to classes over in Champaign at a commercial college. Got a job in Urbana, and after 2 years in Hoopston, she married a guy in Monticello by the name of Darrell Tippett, who ran the newspaper. And of course, I was a sports nut, and Tip was a sports nut too. And he ran the paper, and we just had a perfect mix of newspaper and sports.
Yeah,
right from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I'm in the third grade, well, that's where we were.
Did you have a moment of like, you know what? I think I want to do this. I want to write for a living. Like, did you ever have No.
The answer is that I went to journalism because Tip ran the newspaper, and he wanted me to go to journalism and maybe take over the newspaper for him when he was going to sell advertising and run job printing, and I would be involved with the newspaper because there wasn't any money there.
Yeah.
he wanted to work in the areas where he could make money, and I'm just a young guy, and I just went along with it without any thought, really. And then the next thing I know, I'm in the military, and I spent 2 years there, and when I got back, then I was going to work for him.
Yep.
And but I had been on the baseball team, and T.O. White covered baseball for the News Gazette in the way back in that era. And when I came back, I'm calling in scores on Monday morning of the Sunday EI League games, Eastern Illinois League games, I called him one Monday morning, and he said, "By the way," he said, "there's a job opening in Hammond, Indiana, and it's the sports department's run by a former Illinois guy who was a good friend of Red Grange. His name's John Whitaker." And he said, once you call him, he might have something for you there. And I thought, well, I never even thought about that.
Yep.
But I called John Whitaker, and he said, can you be up here Monday? It was the next Monday. And I said, yeah. He said, I'll meet you on the Kankakee Golf Course. I said, okay, Kankakee Country Club. I walked up to him, and make a long story short, I took a job with them. They offered me $75 a week, and I said, that's what my dad's paying me. And so he went to DeLaurier, the president of the newspaper, the Hammond Times, and DeLaurier said, give the kid $100 and we'll get this out of the way. And so that's how I started.
And you were in Hammond for how many years?
11.
11 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you cut your teeth on.
Well, I just covered high school sports, essentially, although I came to a lot of Illinois games, and I got to write some stuff. And But I became sports editor in 63. I had been there, let's see, since 56, basically, 55, 56. So in 63, I became sports editor. And then I had applied for the job when I wasn't sports editor.
Yep.
And then Lou Baker called me. He was a defensive coach for Pete Elliott. He called me one day and said, you know, the sports editor from the News Gazette is leaving. I said, really? I said, I applied for that job 3 years ago and didn't get it. And he said, you know, you weren't sports editor then. Now you're sports editor. Maybe that'll carry a little more weight. So I got a hold of Harold Holmes, and I had an interview, and I was hired before anybody knew that the position was open.
Nice. And this is what year?
66. It's a fall. It's the beginning of the football season in 1966.
Okay. And when did slush fund come down?
That December.
So you take over. You come to the News Gazette that fall.
I am a jock.
Yep.
Who was not a proper. I didn't have the proper attitude about things because I was an Illinois fan.
Yep.
I mean, I went back to 1946 and 45 and 46 and when I saw Illinois football for the first time, and I was a big fan.
Yep.
And when I was in Hammond, I was actually the secretary, along with Hale Swanson and Lou Boudreau, who were on the board, of the Illini Club up there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. This is all wrong. I played golf with Harry Combs in Monticello when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And Harry was the basketball coach. And, of course, Pete Elliott was a dear friend of mine.
Yep.
And treated me just, you know, and in those days when the game was over, when the practice was over, we would go into the locker room and sit in the locker room while the coaches took turns showering, and you'd interview anybody that came. You had access to the entire staff.
Right, right. It's a little
it's
different.
It's a little
now.
Different.
Tiny, tiny bit different.
Now we're Zooming, and we don't even see the guys in person.
That's right. That's right. So, okay, let me ask you a question about that era then. So if the 51 team played the 63 Rose Bowl, the 64 Rose Bowl, 63 team,
mm-hmm.
the Buckus team, mm-hmm. plays the 51 8-0-1 team or whatever, who wins that game?
It's not fair. They're so much bigger.
Yeah?
And they were faster and they had better linebackers.
So it's the same as comparing, like, having one of those teams play somebody today or whatever?
Well, I love the 51 team because most of those guys are my friends. Herb Nethery was from Hoopston. We would have played together if I'd stayed in Hoopston. And I spent 2 years in Hoopston with my grandparents before I moved to Monticello.
Yeah.
But, no, I Joe Hall was my roommate. Joe Hall and I played softball all summer long together. He was a linebacker. He got knocked out, and when we beat Ohio State, I think the score was like 7-0 or 14-7. It was a low scoring game, and Joe got knocked out and didn't know how the game turned out until the next day. But
the good old days.
Oh boy. But I knew all. Rex Smith was in journalism, and Wozniak, and I just knew all those guys, you know, and they were my friends.
Yeah.
So it's hard to become a writer when you've got that feeling about things. I mean, you're prejudiced.
Hey, I'm familiar with that concept.
I had to change after the slush fund.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had a bad run of coaching, and you know, we brought Jim Valick in, and the Valick staff, and I, you know, we're sitting here on this golf course, and I teed off right here with the Illinois staff when this was number one, what's now number eight.
Yep.
And they treated me like king. I helped them in recruiting in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And that all ended, and of course they started losing games, and I'm starting writing about losing games, and then they get mad at me, you know. And
yeah,
so next thing I know, I'm persona non grata.
Yeah, yeah. That's
or barely acceptable.
I get it. I understand. So when so then you go into the 70s, which is has to be, I mean, for people of my generation, the debate is, were the 2010s worse than the 1970s? I know the 70s were really dark days around here.
Well, Blackman at least had competitive teams most of the time. He just couldn't beat Ohio State and Michigan.
Yep.
But he did okay against everybody else.
Yes. And if it was the schedules like they are today, where you played three nobodies, you know, some of those teams were like 4-4 in the Big Ten, right? So those would have been like bowl teams, what people would have.
But he never got over 500, I don't think, until the final year, maybe when he was 6-6.
Yeah.
He may have been 6-5. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at it. But he just wasn't quite able to pull it off.
Yep. And then Moeller goes downhill.
Anyway, really downhill with Moeller. Yeah. Yep. Those 3 years were really bad. And he was trying to run things like Michigan when us sports writers got shut out pretty much. I remember standing out in the cold waiting to get in to talk to him for a few minutes. You know, he didn't have much respect for the media, and he didn't earn much of our respect either.
Yep. So let's go 1980, and let's just walk through. We'll kind of flip back and forth between football and basketball. So Lou is here. Lou gets here in 76, about the same time as Moeller. Moeller flames out in 79. And then Mike White is here, and that begins this little rebirth moment.
Oh, absolutely.
When did you know that for both programs that, like, okay, you know, 80s are going to be something?
Well, I think as they developed, I mean, the thing that happened when Mike came here is that he had some many contacts on the West Coast, and he had people who worked with him. And he recruited a lot of the junior college transfers without ever seeing them, because he had guys he could rely on out there that knew how good or how potentially how good these guys were. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of really good players out of the West Coast in those days.
Yep.
Which I always felt like, how do you sustain this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just too far away.
Yep.
But during those early years, Mike was able to bring in the three quarterbacks, Wilson, Easton, and Trudeau. And you know, Illinois was really good at quarterback. And then he brought a passing attack that was different than anything anybody out here had ever seen. And Illinois, you know, the first time, you know, Wilson goes over to Ohio State and throws in a 49-43 game and throws for a – what was the number of yards? I've forgotten.
6'10" or something like that.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Something like that. 6'14" or whatever it was, and it was a record. It was an NCAA record, and we lost the game, but it was just like, even though Illinois was losing the game, his personality had everybody upbeat, and it was a feeling that there was, you know, that things were and he was two people. He was one person on the field, and he was another person when he got off the field. Everybody loved him off the field, even the media.
I'll just go back to me. So 83 is when I first, like, sports are a thing. I'm 10 years old.
Yeah.
There's that football season that fall. The next spring is a near Final Four, the Kentucky game, everything else. And then – as I remember from, you know, from my dad and everything else, and I'm just a kid, like, demand for tickets is at an all-time, like, football games are selling out.
Yep.
Is the pinnacle of Illini demand then?
Yes.
Like, at, like, early 80s, 83, 84 was like...
through the 80s.
Just...
Of course, the basketball in the 2005 was crazy, but...
Right.
But if you're talking about football, it was no question.
Yep. I'm just curious of, like...
It went through Maccovic.
Yes.
But Tepper could never find the right offensive guy. He had good defensive teams in that period, but Tepper could never find things. Well, he had Landry for a while, but then that ran afoul due to the problems down in Louisville. You know, Redmond committed to Illinois, and then he goes down and tries to talk Redmond into coming with him if he could get the Louisville job. And then Tepper didn't have any choice. He had to fire him.
Yep. And then Redmond's gone, and then Paul Shudell was not the answer.
He wasn't.
And down we go. So I guess where I'm going at with that, where I'm going with that question is, who knows what happens with the fan base after the pandemic? Like you know, attendance college football wise, even college basketball wise, has been down the last few years. You know, maybe we've reached a peak on ticket prices. So as far as like fan demand and focus, we'll probably never get back to 83, 84. I don't think.
Like, yeah, never's a big word, but right. I don't see it for a long, in yeah. my lifetime. Let's yeah. put it that way. I mean, it's just
yeah.
It doesn't look. You know, Lovey has lost an awful lot of fans. I mean, before him, Beckman did, and
yep.
and now you know Beckman kind of spoiled it for Lovey, and now Lovey is not exactly setting it up for the next guy either.
Yep, yep. And there was so last year was the had the risk of being the lowest total fans. I had looked this up. I think it was since 62 or 61. Like the average attendance in like 61 was 34-1 or something like that.
We were going through a 15-game streak of no wins.
Yes, yes.
Before we got Butkus yes. and before Pete could get things turned around.
Yes. So the question is, like, I fan-wise and attendance-wise and program demand, I don't know if that will those days ever come back of, like, you know, all these consecutive sellouts at Memorial Stadium. And, you know, I just don't know if fandom is, like, you know, we might wake up in 5 years and Michigan has 60,000 people at the big house. Like, you know, college football is changing, and Tennessee isn't selling out games, and, you know, only Nebraska can
keep
their sellout streak
alive. You can't keep disappointing your fans
yep.
repeatedly and expect them to keep coming back forever. Now, the pandemic has changed all that. I mean, worse by yep. far. I mean, we're not even allowing them in now, but I think if you were to, let's just say 2 years from now, open it all up again, you won't get the numbers you want.
Yep, yep. And that's the question of where all this goes is, you know, I have this
you know
theory. The,
you know where we all made a mistake?
Where's that?
We all thought that when sports came back that we would that TV would be they'd break records on TV.
Yep.
Baseball's down. NBA was down.
Yep.
College football's down. Why?
Yep.
I don't understand it. I mean, we don't have anything else to do. We ought to watch TV, but we're not.
Yep.
We're not watching in the numbers that the TV. The TV people thought they had a bonanza here, and it is not turning out that way.
Right, which means revenues are going to be way off.
Yeah, more $54 million.
That's right. I have the theory that, you know, I have the theory that Illinois is hurt less by all of that simply because
that's true.
Ticket sales are $11.9 million for football last year. Nebraska's $49 million or whatever, so
yeah.
you know that's it's not some revenue loss that Illinois has to make up, and yet
no,
Nebraska
Ohio
does.
State loses a lot more money than Illinois.
Correct, correct. But yeah. they also have other ways of just you know flipping a switch and turning on a spigot that Illinois doesn't. But where I'm going with all that is like, you know, what given everything you've seen, let's just keep it 66 to now. Like, what is the path back for Illinois football? I mean, you know, the obvious question is, like, hire the right coach and build, you know, build the program. But, like, what's the path back from today, given, you know, everything you see? Follow what Mike White did. Follow what Makovic did. Like, what's the blueprint?
I don't think there's a – I can't imagine anything that's going to get us back to the point where you and I will be satisfied. I just mm-hmm. think that – as I said, Beckman left it for a tough situation for Lovey. Lovey's not winning games. He's going to leave a tough situation for the next guy. I just don't know. I think we're in the mode of that Kansas State was once in, and in yep. the mode where Indiana was once in, Northwestern was once in, long periods, decades of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Or decades of unsatisfactory results. Mm-hmm. You win a few games occasionally, but. Mm-hmm. And now the one thing that could change all that is this new transfer rule.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I just can't believe that that's going to be a successful way to go. If you can't recruit high school players, I don't think you can ever get on top.
Yes, yes. And do you mean that in the sense of like, yes, maybe you can patch some holes, but
yeah.
you're not really developing a program. Yeah. You're not developing kids for 5 years like
that's what we're doing
like
right
Wisconsin
now.
Does. Yeah.
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 And the weird part about this one is we had all those seniors coming back this year, and yet if you would look at the standout players that Illinois has had in the game so far, that a lot of them were players that you didn't expect or weren't aware of or didn't expect to be that good this year.
Yeah.
And they brought several guys off the bench, like Barnes comes off the bench and has a great game, and the next game he's not even starting. Randolph had a really good game, and the next game he's got the virus.
Right.
Or contact tracing.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's kind of weird, I think, the way this whole season has developed.
Yep.
But I can't understand, and you got to explain to me how you can be so inept on pass defense.
Yeah, I don't. I have no explanations. I'm writing a post on it right now, just like trying to watch film and figure it out. It's those statistics, the 87% completion, 7 touchdowns, there. Like, I can't remember that over 2 games ever. Like, I can't remember that solid a passing attack.
But I will tell you that for years since Lovie's been here, I've been upset in the press box watching and seeing the number of receivers that were too wide open.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is in the extreme right now, but it's always been, to me, a weakness.
Yep.
Am I wrong on that?
Not at all.
I mean, it's my feeling. I've written about it for years.
Mm-hmm. My theory is that, I mean, people use the term bend, don't break, and I don't think that's exactly the idea. But I think there is a defensive scheme of keeping things in front of you, like don't get beat over the top kind of stuff, which they're also getting beat over the top, you know, that big pass on Saturday. But, like, I feel like the idea is, okay, fine, we'll give that away just as long as we're not giving up 70-yard bombs.
Well,
the
mistake I make probably is not realizing fully that everybody has troubles on pass defense.
Yes.
Everybody, I mean, it's a tough – it's a tough job to try to prevent other good quality receivers from getting passes from really good quarterbacks.
Yep.
And so I probably am exaggerating my concern, but it just seems like we've gone one step too far defensively in being inept.
Yep. You're right. I mean, you know, there's those Nick Saban quotes this year about, like, you know, it was played out as defense is over in college football, and it's like you got to have a great offense because nobody's going to win with a defense anymore and all that stuff. So I think there are changes happening, but, you know, you don't see – Purdue threw it pretty well against Iowa, but they didn't have this same level of just consistent success. And you know, Wisconsin –
Well, did anybody ever beat 20 out of 21? I mean, it's pretty hard to beat it, isn't it?
Yes. Except for this guy started, what, 16 for 16 before his first incompletion? I mean, it's just, how do you even – I remember when – I think it was Neil Lomax with the football Cardinals did that once. He went like 17 for 17 in a game, and I was just amazed as a kid.
Well, things like that happen, and you
yep.
can – it's, you know, it's – you can say, well, this is an example, and it's not really it doesn't happen. It's just fluky.
Yep.
But what I'm seeing – is a guy who comes in here as a defensive coach who should be, you know, outstanding at his craft, and I'm talking about Lovie, and in teaching defense, and our defense has been unspectacular.
Yep, yep. I mean, I was watching the game again. Devin Witherspoon played actually pretty well, like comparatively to Hobbs as a corner on Saturday. Yeah, he was giving up some of those slants, but a lot was to Hobbs' side and because Hobbs is on Bell. But yeah, you've got Tony Adams in his fourth year. You've got Sidney Brown in his third year. You've got Nate Hobbs in his fourth year. You've got Devin Witherspoon in his second year.
A lot of experience.
You've
there.
Got two
and backup
senior
experience.
Defensive ends. You've got this, you know, you got Rod Perry, who's in his fifth year of college football and, you know, maybe your best defensive lineman. You know, have all this experience. Hanson's in his fifth year. Eifler's in his fifth year. Tolson's in his third year. Yeah, there's not a single, like, well, it's going to get there kind of excuse. This is just it has to be there, and it's not. It's maddening to me.
Well, I've always felt like going into the season that this would be our best chance.
Yep.
And that after this season, things would just fall apart.
Yep.
Well, I don't know now. This has been a failure so far, but the thing that's interesting is how many of these seniors are going to want to come back and play another year. They can.
Yep. Yep.
And that changes all my thinking about the future. I just, you know, can't even consider that till we know whether Kramer's going to come back or whether we know if Peters is going to come back and in the whole lineup. There's every single player on the Illinois football team right now could come back and play next year.
Yes, yes.
I don't think they all will, but they could.
Yep. I mean, you see things like – on Twitter, like Eifler the other day said something about, you know, like so many more weeks of school and then I have my degree and this and that. So I, you know, I had originally thought, gosh, a lot of these guys are going to want to come back, especially guys like Carney and Gay who had to play as true freshmen. Well, now they would be redshirt juniors. Instead, they're seniors. Well, they get that redshirt year back with this, and next year they can, you know, really show what they have after 5 years and maybe take a shot at the draft or whatever. But, you know, when you see Eifler and Hansen just talking, like, you know, with school, with the school side of it, of like, hey, I've done my 5 years. I don't really feel like going to class anymore. You know, some of them already have grad degrees and this and that. Sometimes it's just I've
been hesitant because I talked to Dre Brown last year, and he could have had another year this year.
Yep.
And I thought you'd be the workhorse. You'd be the number one running back. You'd be the star of the team, babe.
Yep.
You know, and we ought to have a good team this year. Mm-hmm. And well, of course, he got married and he just had other plans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that happens. I mean,
and it isn't like they're going to the NFL.
Right. It happened with Jake Cerny this year, that getting married, had a fifth year. There's an open spot on the offensive line. He was the starter in the bowl game, and he was just on to life. And so, yeah, that's the thing, is how many of these seniors, especially the fifth-year seniors, will be like, you know what, time for life. Either give the NFL a shot. If it doesn't work, go get a job and or whatever. Or, you know, I'm just tired of the grind. Because the grind today, which I don't think people even understand. I mean, even for these football players during COVID, the testing they have to do, the get up at 6 a.m. and get tested, you know, the ability to, you know, they are more or less quarantined like we all were in March.
Yep.
Of like, do not leave the house, do not go anywhere, do not talk to anyone.
This is different.
Yep. And how many of them are going to want to just be like, I'm getting out of this. I'm done with this. Do you, talking about coaches, do you agree with the whole colleges won't have money and so most coaches will keep their job?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like,
I think that's very, yes. I don't think that the athletic directors can afford to fire many coaches. Because it isn't just firing a head coach. You're firing the staff. You're firing, you know, basically most staff will leave. And then you got to have new staff. You got to fire a new coach. I mean, I don't see many. I think it'll be a really small number this year.
Yep.
There might be some who want to throw in the towel.
Yep.
But I don't think that ADs will be firing many of them.
So.
And not only that reason, but there's just something strange about this season that you just can't really blame anybody for having a problem, you know.
Yep. Yep. So 1-8 Lovey returns.
Yeah. I think he would return. Yes, I do.
Yeah,
he's got a $2 million buyout after the end of this season.
Yep.
But I think if they lose every game but one, I think he'll be back. But I don't know. Whitman's going to be under an awful lot of pressure from a lot of people. But there's also a lot of people don't care anymore. And then apathy is the biggest problem. Is a much bigger problem that Illinois has than almost anything else. Is the apathy of the fans.
Yep.
They used to be furious over a loss, you know, like Saturday to Purdue at home, and now there's just indifference.
Yep.
That's a bad sign.
It really is. It really is. I want to talk about, I want to dig into your brain here with some, like, who's the best kind of questions. So we'll first go with Illinois football, of, like, the single best player. And I won't limit you to 66. I'll let you say Butkus if you want to say Butkus.
Well, it's Butkus,
yeah. Like, okay, tell me why, like, who would be number two? Simeon? Would you put Simeon Rice number two?
No, maybe J.C. Caroline.
Really?
I mean, J.C. was sensational that year.
Yeah.
I mean, he and Caroline and Bates, that 1-2 punch, they beat Ohio State by two or three touchdowns or 20 points or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I JC's always been a favorite of mine just because it was an era of running backs.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that the Wilson Easton Trudeau thing, that was, you know, I have a hard time separating them. I didn't think Trudeau was better than Easton.
Yeah.
But he had more yards because he played one more year than he did.
Yep.
And Wilson, of course, only had the 1 year and they finished 3-8. So Wilson had a great game, but didn't have a great season.
Yeah.
But my problem is that when I start naming my favorite players, it's some of the guys are my buddies.
Yeah.
From going back, way back.
Yeah.
And they're my favorites.
Uh-huh.
But,
I get it.
But
Butkus was the best by far.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Butkus and Grabowski, that was a great pair.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if I limit you to my fandom, we're starting in 83. So Rose Bowl team was my first team. Who's the single best football player you've seen in those, what would it be, 37 years?
I don't know. I don't know who I would name. I liked our linebackers as a group.
94 linebackers.
The threesome, Howard and Holosek. But, you know, you always include, some people include Simeon Rice in that, but he was a defensive end for me. I mean, he wasn't a linebacker.
Right.
But I think that I just have a problem with that. I guess I can't come up with a name that would satisfy you. But
no, you're fine. Because for me, it's always been Simeon, because of 44 and a half sacks and everything else. Like, again, same thing. I was in school. I was a fan. I was going crazy.
Here's my problem.
He could take over a game.
Before I name him the best player, you got to play four downs.
Okay.
And the first couple of years on all running downs, he was not even on the field.
Yep.
And he was just a pass rusher.
Yep.
And the pass rushing is great. And yet, if you count the number of games he played and the number of sacks he had, it comes out one plus a game or something. You know, that's one play out of 70 or 150 or whatever the number of plays is.
Yep.
And so I like Simeon. I just wouldn't rate him the best player I ever saw. But if I thought about this enough, I might come up with a better answer for you. But that's not something I sit around and wonder about.
But here's the thing: that's kind of an answer in itself, in that there hasn't been that superstar above everybody else player in Champaign in at least 25 years. I mean, Kevin Hardy was really good at football.
Mm-hmm.
Big, strong, fast.
Yeah, he's really good.
Agile. Like, the guy who's 6'3", 245, and he runs like a wide receiver, kind of like, wow, this is...
Back-to-back Butkus.
Yes, a different kind of athlete. There just hasn't been that guy. Probably Whitney Mercilus is the only comparable thing, and, you know... Maybe Corey Legit. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? But the answer is there hasn't been that guy, and that's why that's a difficult question. Is, you know, they just haven't landed on another superstar.
No, there hadn't been another Butkus, but they've had a couple of Butkus winners.
Yes, correct. Correct. Okay, now let's go with most underrated. So I'm really putting you on the spot today. So if who is a player? Let's just go, you know, your entire Illinois time of, I don't know why that guy isn't mentioned among the
most
greats.
Underrated player in Illinois history is Bill Brown.
Okay, here we go.
I'm taking you too far back.
No, you're fine. Tell everything. I need to know everything there is to know about Bill Brown.
Okay, Bill Brown was a fantastic linebacker and fullback for Illinois. He also punted. He was a beast. He scored the winning touchdowns in game nine. The most underrated. If I was going to go back, take me back one more. Mm-hmm. If you're going to ask me who my favorite guy was, it'd be Nitschke.
Yes.
I mean, okay. Nitschke was.
That question was coming next.
Because of his personality and because of his off, maybe because of his personality, but he was like a cat on defense. You block him, he'd be up and still make the tackle. But Bill Brown won games for Illinois and on both sides of the field and you know, he's one of the all-time greats of the Minnesota Vikings, and I don't think he ever has received. He's not on the Hall of Fame, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't received the accolades that I think that a player of his caliber should receive, but that's going back to the late 50s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right before Pete got here.
Yeah.
So that's something I've carried with me all through the years. Mm-hmm. I know you want something more recent.
It's fine.
Maybe if I could think, nobody comes out.
My answer to that question is always Mo Gardner, just because, I mean, he's the least known two-time All-American ever. Like, back-to-back years, first-team All-American. You know, there's some reasons for that of, of why, you know, he got credit for some things, and Mel AG was pretty good. And
reputations are really important when it comes to these things. That's why maybe Hardy, you know, his reputation being part of that linebacker group with Howard and, you know, having the extra year where he played opposite Simeon. But Mo was hurt a lot of his senior year.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the player his senior year that he was his junior year, in my opinion.
Yep.
And maybe somebody can debate that, but I just think that the second year he got it mainly on reputation, and his reputation was excellent.
Yep.
But Mo was a good one.
Yep. And again, like you said earlier, time of my life watching that plays into this because I'm this starry-eyed late teens, like, huge football fan, and there's this monster in the middle of the Illinois defense.
If you let me run down the book, if I had the guide here and I could go down all the names, I'd come up with some people like that. But I just off the top of my head, it's not something that I've thought about other than I mention the Bill Brown thing.
So if you go favorite, you go Nitschke?
Let me tell you a story about Nitschke, because we're sitting here on a golf course.
Yep.
So he comes out, and they said, we're going to have a tournament today, and you got an A player, B player, and C player, and two C players, okay? Mm-hmm. Joe Thompson was the A player. Nitschke was the B player. Nitschke stood up there, and he said, I just want to tell you guys, anybody that leaves a putt short, this is, you know, anybody leaves a putt short, that's $2 in my pocket. Then he turns to Joe, he says, and they weren't listening. He says, that doesn't matter for you and I, Joe.
That is great.
He was the toughest guy. He had the weirdest guys in his following that you've ever met.
Really?
Oh, man. When he went into a bar, there were guys around him, and you just wonder where those guys came from.
Mm-hmm.
Nitschke was different.
Mm-hmm.
But my lordy, I saw we had a game, an Illini against former Illini, back when Mike White was here. And Nitschke's on the sideline, and he couldn't stand it anymore. He wanted to know where he could get a helmet. His wife was there. He says, you're not going anywhere. You're staying right here. Mm-hmm. He wanted to play.
Yep.
He was quite old at that time.
Yep. Okay, so we're going to switch to basketball, and we're going to go through these same lists since I've got you on the spot here, like trying to figure it out. So we'll start with the single best basketball player you've seen at Illinois. Like if there was a draft and you were drafting a team, you get the first overall pick.
Does it depend on how they played in the NBA?
That's a good question. Yes. Yeah. You can take their entire career.
Oh, really?
Yes. You can take their, you don't have to just limit it to, you know, maybe they blossomed late and, you know, whatever, or maybe they only played 1 year here and then were this, but if you have the number one overall pick of former Illini players, who do you take?
Can I take my roommate?
Yes, you can take your roommate. Absolutely.
No, Don Sunderlich was my roommate. He was Big Ten Player of the Year in that year.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it would be up through the Harper years and up through, I suppose Nick Anderson would be my favorite. Nick was awfully good, and of course all the good players, all the great players at Illinois didn't stick around for the senior year, whether it was Harper or Darren of course Nick.
Yep.
And so that makes a big difference. I mean, Gil was a developer who stayed all 4 years and then had a nice career in the pros.
Correct.
But he got better and better and better and better. He wasn't very good as a freshman.
Oh, he was skinny. He was 145 pounds or something. So skinny.
He had a bad shooting streak that year, and he came back stronger and better, and he got better as he went along. I'll leave somebody out. When you've covered the thing for nearly 60 years.
I think you're right. I think it would probably be Nick. I think he might even be the underrated player. Like, people don't, you know, like kids these days, listen to me, I'm, you know, 47 and I'm saying this, but like the younger generation than me, I don't think anybody really understands like how good he was. Like, he was top 10 high school talent.
Yep.
Like, maybe one of the five best players in the country. He comes to Illinois. He dominates right away. He was legitimately, like, so, so good. And, you know, he probably loses a little reputation because of the stupid free throws in the NBA Finals or whatever, and that becomes the thing. When, you know, it's so dumb that you know, four individual free throws or whatever. But still.
But I want to tell you something. There was, when Harper played defensively, there was nobody better.
Really?
Oh, man. He had the hands and the quickness, and he had the – he was a terrific player. Mm-hmm. Harper was really good, and he didn't shoot until his senior year. That was his junior year. Mm-hmm. He didn't stay for his senior year, but he was he wasn't a great shooter, but boy, he was a good player.
Yeah, yeah. When I like, if I my answer for favorite player as well as most underrated player or not talked about enough player is the same person, and that's Kenny Norman.
I was going to say that
because he like. That's the other, like, man, nobody understands. Like his junior year, like, nobody gets how unstoppable he was.
He was unstoppable, just, except on a 15-footer at the end of the Austin Peay game.
That's right.
Horace Crime, he had the easiest shot he'll ever get, an open free-throw-length shot.
Yep.
It hit the back of the rim and came out. And you know what?
Yep.
If Illinois wins that game, I don't know how far they're going to go. I mean, they were really good.
The 10 seed won won that region. Like, I've always claimed that would have been I've always claimed that's the number three team in Illinois history. You can debate whether 05 would beat 89 or 89 would beat 05 and whatever.
83 was good, too.
83 was good. I still think 84 was or 87 was.
Douglas was a unique player in that he was so effective without being able to. He couldn't shoot a 3-pointer, which they didn't have at that time. But you know, he couldn't shoot from the perimeter, but he didn't try to shoot from the perimeter. And they worked it inside to Ephraim a lot and Big Montgomery, and they had a really good team. And Altenberger was with that group.
Yep. He had an injury, so he came back. Yep. Right.
Uh-huh. Like he had a fifth
missed a year, so he had a fifth year.
And that's how he got into the 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
87 was the first year for it.
Yeah.
I mean, first year universally. Mm-hmm. For the whole nation.
Where do you think Io can end up in this, you know, if we're talking about this pantheon of like Illini players, and now Io comes back for a third year and he's, you know, on some preseason All-American lists, mm-hmm. and, you know, this is the first time for any, at least preseason All-Americans since 05. Maybe D in 06 was a preseason All-American, but like, where do you think he can end up in?
Well,
this?
He's got a great chance. If he can shoot, if he'll shoot 35% on threes, that's all he has to do. He's got everything else. I mean, I don't think he's a great setup guy. Not a great setup. He's okay. He's good.
Yep.
But he's not a real point guard, and he wants to play point guard this year, and I know they want him to because that's why he came back.
Right.
But
right.
In the break, in the open court, there's nobody. I don't think we've ever had anybody any better.
Yep.
Harper was awfully good in the open court, fast and could jump and you know, could fly. But I think that I think Io is better. There's just something about the way he finishes. He's just unstoppable.
Yeah, I've said that before, that, like, he's got kind of the speed of D. D was maybe a little faster. D had the burst fast break layup where, you know, they just blink once and he's, you know, they hesitate a tiny bit and he can get to the rim. But he didn't really have the finishing moves that Io does.
No.
Finishing moves, I always thought Kiwan Garris was like he was the guy of, like, the underrated
Garris
around the backboard, his ability to know where he was to flip it off the
rim.
How
many players have been better than Garris for four consecutive years?
Right.
Not many, because the best ones all left after, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of them left after three.
Yep.
You go all the way back to John Kerr, he only played 3 years.
Yep.
They saved him, you know, they had him sit out that first year, and mm-hmm. I may be mistaken on that, but let me think about that again. But anyway, he came in at the semester is all I remember. They made him sit out that first – he sat out a year and a half instead of just a year, because if he sat out a year, then he would have been coming in and playing in January.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And Harry Combs didn't want to do that. And the team goes to the Final Four, and they lose the game because Peterson fouled out and they didn't have a center.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a fact. I mean, if he'd had Red Kerr at that time – Red wasn't great – when he got here, he developed. He was skinny, really lanky guy.
Yep.
Tall, but no strength. He got stronger and stronger, and then, of course, he had a long NBA career.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, we've lost a lot of guys that played less than 4 years, including Snake.
Yep. And Yeah, and that's why Garris and Dion are 1-2 on the scoring list.
Mm-hmm.
And Garris is wildly underrated. I kind of see Io as this, on the break, is this combination of D's speed to get past you, but also Kiwan's ability to, like, I remember him as this guy who could, how do I say it? I remember Lou Henson talking about it once, that his ability to slow down the ball while he's going fast,
mm-hmm,
is something I've never seen. Like, where he's flying to the rim, but somehow as he lets it go, he's putting it up as soft as if he, mm-hmm, was just trotting toward the rim.
That's a trick.
Yeah, I could never understand with Kiwan how he could,
You have to be able to do that.
Yes.
If you just go all out all the way,
yep,
you're liable to, you're not going to have any touch.
Right. And so Io is like D speed and Garris's touch. And you're right. It's all shooting. It's all, can he be, I'll be interested to see how, you mentioned that's why he came back. So, like, they got really good when they put Trent at the point a lot and had Io off the ball and this and that. How much this year he'll be on the ball, especially with Feliz gone. And
Underwood's got a real problem.
Yeah.
Because the best player he's got coming in, I think, is Curbelo, although you, mm-hmm, might argue Miller, but Miller's a better shooter. But Miller is a shooter, but Curbelo is a total basketball player,
yep,
with playmaking skills like we haven't had in a while.
Yep.
And yet, if I think Io feels like his future, which he does have a future in the NBA, is at point because, mm-hmm, of his size. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're 6'2", 6'3", 6'4",
yep,
you're supposed to be a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wants to develop at that position, and I don't know how Underwood's going to handle this in the long run. I know he's, yep, going to start that way, but,
right,
when he sees Curbelo, I don't know how he's going to keep him out of there, and I don't know how you play Curbelo on a wing. I don't know how you do that.
Right. The hope in the fan base seems to be, I'm like, okay, well, Miller replaces Griffin, Curbelo replaces Feliz, and we just pick up where we left off. Everybody's a year older. It's good. That chemistry, that mix, that trying to put all that together is going to be the most interesting thing.
Because, yep,
if you get it right, this is an unlimited team. You have probably two of the top 15 players in college basketball.
Well, that Underwood has a whole different concept than what I'm familiar with. If you go back to the teams in 2005, the first five. If you go back to 89, the first five. You go back to the teams that I was with in the 50s and when Red Kerr played it, we had a first five. You had Bremoris and Falmer at the forwards. You had, Bredar at one guard. He took Sunder Lidge's place. I mean, it was a set thing, and you didn't have players coming in the whole game and streaming in. We didn't have that in 2005,
mm-hmm,
even.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because we played our best players as much as we could because they were the ones going to win the game. Now it's different.
Yep.
Underwood's going to play 8 or 9 guys.
Yeah.
And they're going to there'll be substitutions with 2-3 minutes gone in the game.
Yep.
And we've got to get used to that. And that's hard for me because I always like it when the other team puts in their second best players.
Right. Right. Time for a run.
Therefore, yep, why do I want to see us put our second best players in?
Yep. It's interesting that, like, my worry with this basketball season, and I don't want to, like, speak this into the universe, but, like, is so many late game things went right last year.
Oh, yeah.
Like that,
Io can't make every shot.
Correct.
In the last 10 seconds.
Yes. When you shoot whatever he did from the field, 46% overall from the field for the season or whatever. Yes, that means you only hit 1 out of every 2 shots, and so if you hit 6 of 7 game winning shots, then the next year you might hit 1 of 7, and that's not that you're not clutch.
But that's what sets great players apart.
Yes, you're right.
Under pressure.
Yes, yeah. And that Michigan shot of, he's guarded well, and he shoots it on the way down with his wrist,
mm-hmm,
because if he shot it when he was rising up, it would have been blocked.
It was a horse shot.
Yeah, it's like
he won the horse game.
Yes, exactly.
It's a shot nobody
and called game while the ball was in the air. Yes, so he's special in this and that. So
well, the thing that everybody's forgetting about the Big Ten is that it's a really good league now.
Yes, yes.
It's better than it's been in a while. We're not talking about Indiana. We're not talking about Michigan. We're talking about Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois, those four. But I'm telling you, there's another level of teams there
yep.
that can beat you on any night. Now, the only difference is now, I don't know, without a home crowd, I don't understand how that's going to work.
I agree.
I mean, it's just a different world.
Yep, yep. I think it'll change the outcome of basketball games way more than football.
Well, you know what the home court record is. I mean, there's a tremendous advantage of playing at home.
Yes. Here's the thing I'm fascinated with is, like, you know, the statistics show the officials give more calls to the home teams. Just, you know, you look across college basketball, it's just statistically the home teams get more calls. Maybe it's part of, you know, I don't think they're biased. It's just part of how, you know, maybe if they're calling a game 50-50, they see a call and their default is to go to the home team or whatever. Who knows? But the statistics show that more fouls are called on the visitors and this and that. Will the officials be influenced in that way at all? Will there be any flow of the game? Will there be any Teddy Valentine kind of emotional, you know, send the ball the other way?
Well, they won't be blowing a whistle, I'll tell you that. They're going to be wearing a mask and they're going to blow the whistle on their hip.
Right, right.
So, yes. I don't know.
Yes, and you're right of, you know, Michigan State is at Illinois and they're up 6 and Illinois goes on a 7-0 run to take the lead and the crowd is going nuts and Izzo just has to take a timeout to kill that. Do you still feel that momentum with no crowd? Does Izzo still feel like he has to take a timeout there, or is it, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I think in that regard, I think he would, yes. Yeah. I think the momentum would be felt with the players and you want to stop that.
Yes. Yes.
But
yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. I always look at that, you know, what's referred to as the Frank Williams show, that Iowa game where he had the behind the back pass to Cook in the first half. Or he had the over shoulder pass in the first half. Then he had the behind the back pass to Cook. They go down, he gets a steal and a layup. The crowd's going nuts. Like, there are moments like that of, like, the coach has to take a timeout. Like, the home crowd is in such a frenzy that you almost, like, you know, everybody knows the timeout is coming. What does the Frank Williams show game look like with no fans there? Like, the benches would be going nuts, but it just wouldn't be the same as...
It's a crazy time.
As seeing Lucas Johnson just... Demir Kapalia, like, out of their mind running around on the bench, like, it's just not going to be the same. And you're right. I don't know what that's going to look like this fall.
You mentioned Lucas Johnson. I met his wife this year, this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I just want you to know, I'm the guy that covered sports for Illinois when he played, and I called every one of his fouls.
And he used them quite effectively.
She laughed.
That's great.
She'd heard that before.
That's great. Okay, so let's talk. We kind of touched on this, but I want your opinion. So, basketball and football, 70s versus 2010s. So you've got your Moeller, and you've got your 1 year of Gene Bartow on basketball, and you got all that. And it was dark, and the crowds were low, and everything else. 2010s was, you know, basketball goes 7 years without a tournament, and football just the bowls in 10, 11, and 14, and 19. Which decade was a lower point for Illinois? Like, what felt lower, 70s or 2010s?
Well, I don't know. I would say that the rage was greater earlier because we weren't used to such failure in the 70s, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we still had a memory that it was possible.
Yeah.
We still had a feeling that it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're reaching a time now where, I guess, people are beginning to wonder whether it's possible or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they have found other ways to bide their time and be donate and all that sort of thing. And then we lost the Chief, which you haven't brought up, but boy, this and that's really affect the fandom.
Yep.
There's an awful lot of fans that just love the Chief, still do.
Yep.
And so I think that at that time, I think that first drop off was the feeling was still among the people that we could get this done. We can get the right guy. We can get the right player. We can get this going again. And right now, I'm not sure. But Underwood's showing that he can get the basketball going again. And of course, we haven't really done it, although 13-7 last year in the Big Ten is good, and we finished just a game out of first place. But we got to prove it now.
Yep.
I mean, just having one little run like that is fine, but you got to, and they're going up against a lot of good teams in that Big Ten, and they're going to be playing mostly Big Ten games.
Yep. What do you think is the ceiling for this basketball team? Like, do you think they could be a Final Four team?
Yeah, I don't see this as being a championship team, but I could see this team getting to the Elite Eight, that level, mm-hmm. maybe the Final Four. But I just think that they're. You've got a whole bunch of teams that are just as good as Illinois. I mean, a lot of teams, 20 or 30 teams out there as good as Illinois, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not – I'm not – I'm just – this is way too early to make a judgment on how good the teams are going to be. Just look at – I mean, how many people said Tampa Bay is going to be in the World Series? I mean, how many – I mean, you can't predict these things. I mean, for us, it's nice that we're picked in the top 10. That's great. But you still have to win the games. Are we better than Iowa? Are we better than Wisconsin? Are we going to be as good as Michigan State? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think we got a shot at it. Yep. But it's going to come down to what happens in the last 4 minutes of a lot of these games.
Yep.
And you just can't, you know, a game like that. When you get a game into the final minutes, it doesn't matter who's best. Mm-hmm. It just matters who can come through in the clutch.
Yep. Yeah, the thing I go back to that – you know, what if this team has, you know, finishes 13-7 in the Big Ten again and there's no improvement and, you know, it's a 5 seed or it's a 6 seed or something, you know, is that a disappointment? I feel like it won't go there simply because of having two players. Like when you're relying on one star guy, you just never know. Maybe it's off year, maybe they play him at the wrong position. When you have, like I've looked up all these player ranking lists, and most, like one of them has both Kofi and Iyo in the top 10 in college basketball this year. Another one had them number 4 and number 15 in college basketball. No other teams have two guys in the top 10. Mm-hmm. I just feel like having two guys,
okay,
it, you know, allows you to play both games whenever you need to.
Answer me this.
Okay.
Let's say they never made any move toward the NBA.
Okay.
They just stayed on the team.
Okay.
How much different is that than if they put their names in and then came back? Oh, my
Within
gosh.
Within 24 hours of each other, they both announced it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, Illinois is going to be good. They came back.
Yes.
What if they never left?
Would
Cats still put us in fourth spot? Cats started this whole thing by announcing that Illinois is one of the top in the Final Four.
Yep.
Come on. That's okay, but we're a long way from there yet.
Yes, I agree with that, and I agree with what you're saying. I would have put them
there. Psychology.
Yes, I would have had us like that had they both announced they're coming back just because, you know, that's – like, I'm a
– It wouldn't have been a splash.
Yes. I am a – like, I'm a team construction kind of – like, the reason – I keep, you know, I'll get worried, and Ken Pom came out with his ratings yesterday, and Illinois was like 17th or 16th or something, and number 6 in the Big Ten going into the year, like just his preseason numbers and all that. And it's like, oh, 6th in the Big Ten, whoa. You know, so I have this, oh, am I overestimating this? Am I talking this up too much? And I just go back to this whole, like, you know, just the general 5 starters back. You have a preseason All-American, and you have a big guy who was freshman of the year, both back. So you have a big and a guard who are back for one more year before the NBA, and then you have two top 50 freshmen.
Do you think that that Kofi's going to be an NBA player?
I think he's going to turn professional.
I do, too.
That might mean a couple years on an NBA bench just to see if he can shoot, and if not, it's off to Europe. But I think, yes, you're right. I mean, the game has changed. He could have been.
I don't know. I think he's an awful good college player.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't see anybody like him. I don't see any. But he is huge. He is big, and he's young. And we've only seen 1 year out of him.
Yep.
But you know, if he stayed around if he stayed 3 years, I think he'd have a better chance. But I don't know. I don't know how. I just don't know how good he is. I know he's an excellent college player. I don't know how he fits at the NBA. I see some guys in the NBA playing center that can really move around and can make the shot from the corner and all that stuff. Yep.
So what you're saying is he'll be here all 4 years and he'll be a three-time All-American. Is that what you're saying here?
No, he's not going to stay that long.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I think especially today, some guys are just like, especially with the money that can be made in Europe now, who knows with COVID, but, some guys are just like, all right, time to give that a shot. Laurent Black, same, okay, 4 years, done with school, could play another year because of that injury, but I'll just go see what I can do. Same as we were talking about earlier with football, but for some guys, it's not even like a, what's the best for my career decision. It's just like, I think this is next.
I don't want to go to school anymore.
Right. I don't want to wake up early.
I remember when I got out of school, I thought, I'm not going to school anymore. And then what do you think? They put me in the Army and they put me in signal school. That was only 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever it was. But I thought, oh, I don't want to study anymore.
Yep. And that does play into it. Like I was the same way. I went 5 years here. Like, by the spring of my fifth year, I was like, if I had to do one more semester, I would not make it. Like, I am so done. I'm just ready to move on, get to the next phase. Okay, so let's jump off of Illinois for a bit, and let's talk about your golf game. how's the swing? What are you working on these days? How's the what's new in your golf game?
Well, I got a new driver.
Okay.
And I'm hitting it really good, but it's...
On the driver?
It's got too much loft.
Okay.
And if you ask me the exact, I can't tell you, but it's too much, but that's okay because I need to get it up in the air.
Yeah.
But anyway, the problem is when I hit my drives, they stop too close to me.
Okay. So you need to work on the ball going away.
I can't. I've lost so much strength that I can't drive it out there far enough.
But you played softball until what? Until about 5 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, until you were like 84 or something?
Well, yeah, I was in my 80s.
Uh-huh. You can still rope that single to left center, right?
That's right. I can still poke it to right field.
There you go.
Hit behind the runner. Uh-huh. But my sports days are – that part of my sports days are over. I was still playing, but the team decided they wanted to win. And so that's when I found a place in the third base coaching box. Okay. And I thought, well, I'm not going to give up my evenings just to coach. And the other guys wanted to coach too. We had an old team. But I played a lot of ball, a lot of years. But it was all fun. At one time I was the best player on our team.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, I was the worst player on our team. That's the way it ended up. But when I was 55, 56, when you're 55 and over, if you're just barely over that, then you got an advantage on the other guys. But when you're 80, you got no chance.
Yes, I get it.
I hit a bullet one night. I'll never forget this. And I even know who threw me out. But I hit a bullet that deflected off the pitcher's glove into right center field. A line drive, I just killed it, and I was out by a half step at first by the right center fielder's throw. That's when I thought, I can't do it. I can't hit it any harder than that, and I can't even beat out a hit to the outfield. He was playing me kind of short, though.
Yeah. See, I have that same experience with softball, but for me, it was at age like 40. I played, like right after college, I played – Like 99 or so, I was on four teams. So I was playing on Sunday nights, Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, Thursday nights.
Yeah.
Four different teams, four different leagues.
Oh, man.
I was first baseman, so I wouldn't have to run very far. Bench to first and back, and all this stuff. And I still remember about 10 years ago, like age 38, 39, when, you read the stories about athletes, like it just starts to go. I remember we played in this one league in Brentwood, Missouri, where the field faced a creek. So the shortest part of the field, it was facing directly perpendicular to the creek. And so the shortest part where the fence was dead center. So you could poke some out in dead center, but if you spray it to left or right, it's you know, way deep because the creek's just straight across the outside of the fence there. Okay. So it was kind of a fun league because if you could poke one straight to center, it was like having a park that with a short porch and right. So everybody's trying to hit, you know, hit it out. And so in my younger days, I could get a few out and this and that. You know, if you, as long as you get it online straight to there, you get it out. And I remember one game, I'm like 38, I hit three fly balls right to the fence. Like I thought I crushed them.
They
dead
didn't
center
go
of the
over,
bat, and they didn't go over. And I had the – wait, I don't think – so I even stayed after with my son that night. I'm like, hey, throw me a couple pitches just to see if I could still pump it out and get any of it out. And I'm like, I don't think I have it anymore. Like, I don't think I have the ability to swing this thing hard enough.
Well, I understand that because I hit the golf ball just as hard as I ever did. It just doesn't go as far.
Yeah. But that shouldn't happen at 39. But, you know, oh, well. Oh, well. So – So, but the new driver, you're getting the ball in the air. Are you playing a lot, or are you just going to the range a lot?
Oh no, I'm playing. I'll play. I played yesterday. I'll play tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't play today because I just don't play 2 days in a row.
Yep.
I don't play 18 2 days in a row. But I wanted to work out today, so I went to Planet Fitness. But I'm just I never was a great golfer, and I'm not a great golfer now. But I can shoot my age. I didn't yesterday. I shot one over, but I can bogey most holes, and and I get a few pars. I had four pars in a row yesterday at one time, but I just I'm just not very consistent. I make bad swings now and then, and of course the course is playing really tough right now, really tough. They aerated all the greens, and then you know you can't putt the ball straight. It just goes crooked, And as I said, they grew trees out here, and I don't know what they were thinking about, but the trees keep getting in my way.
Yep. All right, you mentioned Planet Fitness, so I got to dig on that. So what's your routine? Are you, you just grabbing the big old
– I haven't done anything for six months. And I decided the other day that I don't want to go through another winter without working out because, I need to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I do light weights and not very much of it,
but I love it.
I ride the bicycle and I try to do a couple of machines with my legs and then three or four machines with my arms, and I do some lay on my back and stretch and stuff, and you know I spend about 45 to 50 minutes in there, and that's it.
I love it.
Three times a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday will be my routine when I get into it. Now I've only been back. I've been there three times, and I'm worried because I look around, and I worry about the virus, but there are very few people in there, and I wipe everything down, and I wear a mask while I'm, you know, and so I don't like wearing a mask, but I found out you can. You can work out with a mask on, and I don't work up a sweat.
I should have noted that we're outdoors and seated 8 feet apart, and and I wiped down your mic with a Clorox wipe before
you
got here.
You know, I'm concerned about it because 12 people from Champaign Country Club just came down with it over a Halloween thing that they were involved in, and and my daughter and my son-in-law are involved with Champaign and the Country Club, and they've been around those people, and Ed Bond just came down with it, and he's positive right now. He won't be at the game Saturday, and so it's happening around me. And maybe if I get it, I'll be okay. But they keep telling you if you're 89 years old, you shouldn't get it because you know older people have more troubles. But I got tested today, and I'll get the result back a little later.
Yep, I got tested today as well for our for our game on Saturday. I don't know if people know that we're required to get a test.
Where'd you go?
To the mall.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel a little weird. Like, you know, like they ask you the questions of like, are you showing any symptoms? No. You know, have you been tested before? Yes. You know, and they're kind of like, why are you getting tested? You know, we're testing all these sick people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have to because I for my job on Saturday, I have to have a clean test. And so, yeah, like the tests are taking more than 48 hours now, you know, so we're supposed to have those tests within 48 hours. Well, if I went tomorrow, I wouldn't have the results back by game time. So, I went and did it this morning.
What do you think is going to happen Saturday?
Oh God.
Can Illinois beat Minnesota? I don't think they probably will.
I mean, I don't like to give my predictions before like the game kind of thing. Like I want to settle all my thoughts Friday night, but as of right now, I'm leaning like big loss. Like, everybody thinks Minnesota's defense can just be attacked. I don't know if we can do that without turning the ball over with Taylor.
Yeah.
And
they've got a veteran quarterback.
Yeah, and Morgan was one of the top five QBs coming into college football this year and like a third-team preseason All-American in all these magazines. We have no pass defense. It just is setting up for a game of like, you know, Illinois turns the ball over and it gets away quickly kind of thing.
Well, you asked me what happens if we're 1-8. What happens if we're 1-8 this year?
I mean, I don't know. I know Whitman, as a former player, has in his head that this has to be, you know, that turning around the football program is like the number one thing.
That's right.
And I feel like with a 6-year contract and a coach in his fifth year, I guess he did get 1 year tacked on with the quasi extension.
No change in the buyout.
Yeah, no change in the buyout extension. But like, it seemed to me pre-COVID, like after last season, my stance was, okay, next year is an extender fire. He's not going to go into 2021 on a 2-year contract. No college coach can do that. Like, recruiting would be worse than it already is. So Whitman will have to make the decision of either giving him extension so he can recruit, or he chooses to retire, or he's fired, whatever. So that's what this season seemed to me. Now, how – I don't know the finances of how they're going to go about this. Like say they come up $35 million in the hole from their budget,
which they will.
I mean, do they go to the board and say, "Hey, you got to float the athletic department $35 million"? Do they get a loan?
Loan's been restructured. You have to do that. But
and if you're doing that, then how would you justify even a $2 million buyout? How would you justify even a new contract? How could you justify anything?
How can you not?
Welcome to Illinois Athletics. Yeah, I mean that's the 8-ball that we're behind is how do you do anything? I feel like at 1-8 with a coach that would just have one bowl game in 5 years and have a senior team go 1-8, I think Whitman would make a move and just say, even if I have to hire the hot young Mac coach for $1.8 million a year, it's better than, you know. I mean, look what Underwood took to go Stephen F. Austin to Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State paid him $1 million that first year. Whitman comes along with $3 million and says, "Hey, come work for us." But Oklahoma State did the, "Hey, we'll take a chance on you, and if you have a good year, we'll redo your contract after the first year." I could maybe see something like that with like some coach from the MAC or something, you know, like, "Hey, we're in a year where we're losing a bunch of seniors anyway, or are we?" But yeah, it's not going to be go pay Luke Fickell to leave Cincinnati money. Nobody has that money. So I don't know how it'll go.
Well, this place has become a bad place. I started to say a cemetery for coaches and
well, there's one across the street.
Yeah, there is, and I just don't know how they're going to get out of this mess. Something will happen at some point. They'll turn this around, but I don't know what it'll be.
Yep,
it'll take a miracle, man.
Yeah, I mean, I had a podcast with another guy a couple weeks ago, and his point, which I totally agree with, is like, if we're being honest, the best thing that could happen for Illinois football is to start winning starting this week. Like that,
well, yeah,
that Lovey gets it going and you ride out that contract. And, you know, a lot of people have this like, "Well, I hope they go 0-9 and then Whitman has to do it, you know, forces his hand kind of thing." Another rebuild is another dark place. And I know that people, you know, have made their decision that Lovey won't be able to coach him up or recruit to a level.
Well, he won't be able to recruit to a level, but he might be able to get transfers, which is a different thing than recruiting, I think.
Yes.
I mean, at least it's another form of recruiting. And
yes.
And I will tell you he had pretty good fortune with the guys that he's got in his transfers.
Yes. And if the rule is voted on in 6 weeks, which it's going
it
to be. And if
it doesn't matter whether it is or not, they're making them all eligible anyway.
Right. So welcome to free agency.
Yep.
And
we got to jump on them.
Right. So then the question is, okay, 2022 class, 8 high schoolers and 13 transfers, maybe?
The only problem is you're getting somebody who has failed somewhere else.
Yes.
Mostly.
Yes.
And for one reason or another, maybe it's injuries, maybe it's couldn't get along with the coach or what. Yep. But it's not a way that I want to see Illinois go. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
But then you watch Saturday and you watch Perry and Hightower and you say,
Oh, yeah.
Look, these are two of the best players out there.
And yeah.
And Bebe and Peters and Ford and and so I think that's right. I think like I could see
they are better players than we can get out of high school.
Correct. A failed player from USC is still better than the top high school player that could come in here, and he maybe isn't the 4-star that USC's thought he was, but he's probably still a high three star. And if we're recruiting low 3 stars, then that's still better. But the issue is what I call the Wisconsin and the Iowa conundrum of, like, Wisconsin and Iowa recruit the kids, they find the talent, they develop them, they get them to buy in and stick around so that years 3, 4, and 5, they're playing really well, they're developed, they know the system backwards and forwards. That's how you do it. If you're just plugging in junior and senior transfers here, then you got to do it all again the next year. And it's back to the Mike White thing we were talking about. It's like,
How
do you sustain that? And that's not really a program. That's just a yearly all-star team that keeps turning over same year.
And even Kentucky can't win championships with the best players if they only have them 1 year.
Yes.
I read
somewhere, I wish I could credit the person who said this. It was like either on a message board or on Twitter, that was pointing to like the U.S. national men's team, the U.S. men's national team, the soccer team, that just is the same kind of, like, hasn't been able to put it together and, you know, didn't even make the World Cup in the last World Cup because there's no cohesion. There's no, from the top on down, there's just not the program that is built up. And now, you know, I'm reading articles that they're, you know, okay, well, they're chasing players who are eligible to possibly play for the USA and they're going to go really young for a while and try to restart that. You know, it's across sports. That's the whole thing of, like, have you developed this culture or have you not? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole thing with Lovey and Underwood of Underwood. They both came in and talked about culture. They both came in and ripped off the Band-Aid. After Underwood's first year, 7 players left? After Lovey's first year, like 18 players left. You know, they kind of both went about it the same way, and they both talked about, like, we've got to revamp the whole thing. I mean, even Chris Thomas did it with the volleyball team. Like, after the first year, like, 4 or 5 players transferred. Like, the second year is the, okay, now we have our culture in, and we go. And that's, you know, I think this winter we'll see the result of that in the State Farm Center, and in these first 2 games, we just have not seen the result of that.
You know, when you mentioned Iowa and Wisconsin, there's teams that have done that, and they know who they are.
Yep.
And I don't know who Illinois is other than they do like fumbles.
Yes. Yes.
That's not enough.
Really big on forcing turnovers and special teams, and you got a punter who can –
oh boy,
can
is he
hit
good?
Hit the 9-iron.
Is he good?
Back it up. And
what if you had the old time game where punting mattered?
Right, right, ooh, right. Man. Yeah, you're right, and that's part of, I think, the fans' complaints with Lovey of playing an NFL game is, like, you know, here, I'll ask you this question. So Saturday, Lovey went for it on 4th down 4 times. Like, he even went for it like at the, where was he, at the 37, which is a typical, like, everybody in the stadium is basically thinking, oh, here comes another Lovey punt, you know.
Fourth and inches?
Yes. Yeah. And he's just going to punt. He's going to play the field position game. This is not the NFL. You know, that's been the complaint I've seen on Twitter years and years and years. Do you think he's feeling a little like, hey,
I don't
time,
know.
Time to just go after it?
He may not be different than he has been.
Yeah.
But he seems different to me.
Yeah.
And I think he's softened somewhat from his beliefs, maybe a little bit. I mean, I just don't think he knows what to do about the pass defense thing. He can see it. He talked about it today on Zoom. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that we're doing some things better, but our pass defense is simply not good enough. The run defense is good enough.
Yep.
You hold a team to 80 yards, that's terrific.
Yep.
On the ground, but you know, if you're giving up over, if you're giving up 300 on the air, you're not going to win many games.
Yep. And I don't see, I mean, in that sense, like Minnesota's the worst opponent to come in the next week is, you know, I feel like they're, you know, they're just on the verge of throwing for 450, you know, it just feels like that's the kind of thing. And then you have to hope the offense hangs up against their, you know, does well against their bad defense, and their defense is pretty, you know, pretty poor, but still, are you going to win a 48-45 game? I don't think so.
You know why I said, one of the reasons I said that Lovie has changed a little bit is that he said that he was going to go for two if they scored late in that game, and I don't know.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't know if he would have done that before. Secondly, I don't know if he'd told us.
Good point. That's a really good point. Yes.
He's changing a little bit. I can see the changes.
Yeah.
Like, he was pressed about how many people had the virus. And he said, well, about two. Well, when you say about two, what does that mean? And, of course, there was a third, and he admitted it. Yep. Now, he wouldn't tell us who, but normally a couple years ago, he wouldn't have told us that.
Yes.
He's letting out a little, oh, I didn't mean to tell you that.
Yes.
That he'll say that.
Yes,
There's a difference in him, and he's a really nice guy. I think he's a really good guy, and it's a shame that the whole idea didn't work out. I think that Josh and I and a lot of people thought he'd be a successful recruiter because his personality is good, but somehow he just can't get the high school recruits.
Yep.
And we get a few out of Florida and we get a few out of Texas, but, you know, they're turning them out by the thousands down there.
Yep.
And the state of Illinois has not turned out many, and the ones that, you know, the guys named Tough go to Ohio State, you know.
Yeah, and I've said that, like, I have told people that everything is there now except for the football. Like, the Smith Center is built. You have
not
a head coach.
May not be paid for, but be careful.
You know, you have the head coach who the players buy into, the behavioral improvements on the team, the cultural, you can just, anybody who's around the program knows it's way different than when Zook was here, and even different from when Beckman was trying to do that but just didn't build that culture. You know, you can see it in the players and how they interact with the media and everything. Like, everything is there as far as, like, there's a different culture and there's a belief in the head coach from the players and there's everything. But the football is, they're 0-2, possibly going 0-3, you know, possibly a 2-7 season, and none of that other stuff matters if it's 2-7 in year five. Like Lovie does so many things, like community wise, and even with the players and helping guys out, even when, like, when they transfer and helping them find spots, and like he's done a lot that he doesn't talk about, and he doesn't want the PR, and he doesn't care, and he has all that stuff, which would be this glorious, like, turnaround. And I think he's hit all the right notes with what's happened in 2020. And he's, you know, he's so good in discussing these things with his players and everything else. But the football, at least in these first two games, just isn't there. You know, I keep waiting for that. Okay, there's the corner. They beat Minnesota Rutgers, shocked Nebraska. And then they come home to Ohio State and they're a real team and they're 3-2. And, you know, but
we needed that original schedule.
Yep. Yes, yes. Get off the ground and do something. Look, I we've gone long here, and I know you've got to get somewhere. So, I'll give you one final question. The top moment in your time covering Illinois, and we'll take that all the way through to today. What's the pinnacle Illini athletic moments? Is it 2005 basketball? Is it the 83 Rose Bowl? Is it Butkus and the 63 team? What is the pinnacle moment that you've covered?
I don't have any idea.
Love it.
If I thought about it, I'm sure that I should be able to answer that.
Yep.
But in other words, the moment where I was most exhilarated, I mean, maybe when we beat Indiana when Bobby Knight was over there or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, that's not a bad answer, because, like, that was, I don't know if any single Illini moment has been discussed more. Like there are people who are 24 years old that know about Nick Anderson's shot. Like, that was, you know, especially with the hatred between the two programs.
I will tell you that the Kaufman shot was bigger.
Because of Bruce Pearl?
Because of the fact that Illinois was down one.
Yep.
When Nick shot, the score was tied. If he misses it, there's still a game.
Yep.
We had lost the Iowa game.
On a ball that went in off of Deion Thomas's elbow.
And the hatred
between
those staffs and between the people of Illinois and the people of Iowa at that time was immense because of the Pearl.
Yep.
I will tell you that that game was bigger.
Interesting.
For me.
Yeah, yeah.
And and because, again, it's when you win a game that's been lost. The game was lost. If they don't put time back on the clock, you know, there's not time for him to get the shot.
Yep.
I mean, he was able to take a dribble and shoot. I mean, it wasn't a bad shot. When you look at it on film now, you realize that wasn't a really horrible shot.
Mm-hmm.
It was passed over to the side, and he caught it and turned and took one dribble and shot.
Yep.
And it wasn't as long as Nick's shot. It was much closer.
Yep.
But the animosity between the two programs was so great at that time.
It was.
But, you know, no games ever since I've started writing meant as much to me as when I was in school in 1951. Knew all the players. We'd go to the Rose Bowl. I went to the Rose Bowl. I was there. I mean, I took a train out. And saw us win the Rose Bowl game. And like I said, all those guys are my buddies. And I went to all the reunions that the 1950, the 51, 52, 53, when they had those reunions for years and years and years, I went to I was invited.
Yeah.
I was one of their guys, you know, not because I'm a sports writer, just as one of the guys. And not I wasn't a football player.
Uh-huh.
But Peter Palmer was a very close friend of mine during that time. Rex Smith was a close friend. I mean, I had a lot of buddies on that team. Because we were in school together, you know.
Yep.
So those games meant a lot more to me personally. This is once I was gone 11 years and came back, it was all of a sudden the slush fund hit and I'm in a different position.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's adversarial.
Yep.
Much.
Yeah.
You know, and it would have been nice if I had a different job and could just go out and cheer for the Illini, which I would have done. But I suppose if I was a fan right now, I'd be in the like a lot of other fans, just so disappointed, don't care anymore, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a long way around it.
No, I like it. I like it. Okay, I lied. I have one half of a final question. You mentioned that shot. I've always argued that there's five shots for Illinois basketball.
Okay.
Tell me if I'm missing any.
Okay.
But there are five. That was the shot.
Made shots.
Yes, correct. Correct. Sorry. The five are Eddie Johnson, Michigan State.
Yep.
Nick Anderson, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Kaufman, Iowa, 93.
Yep.
Darren's three to tie it.
Oh, that's a big one.
In 05.
That was huge.
And then Griffey's layup over number one Indiana in 13.
Well, when you talk about Darren and you're taking a team to the Final Four, that's a little different than making a layup against the number one team. I mean, it's great that you won
to get
a game,
to a
but you're not going anywhere.
Right.
And it was a layup.
Right.
It wasn't like it was hard to make. They just made a mistake defensively and put two men on our guard from Peoria. What was his name? But anyway... I would go with the game that had more meaning long term and the tournament getting to the Final Four is huge.
Yep, yep. I put that Griffey moment just because of what it meant at time of, like, you know, the bottoming out after 05 was so deep. So to beat Indiana, beat number one Indiana, that was like this, like, you thought we'd regained it. I think that moment would still be bigger if there was a climb after that and not another bottoming out, you know, and then, you know, Gross gets fired and everything else. If it had built from there, like, it would be looked at like the Eddie Johnson shot, but to beat number one. But, yes.
A tournament shot's different than a regular season shot.
Right. Okay. I appreciate you doing
this.
All right. Thank you for coming over here.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon.